Well, as they say, Sean Leahy, another day, another dollar. We are done with our Columbus coverage here at the 60th annual being a relative term, considering how many times they've not played it, all-star game for the National Hockey League. It is a Puck Daddy all-skate today. No Merrick. He's not in Columbus. Me, Leahy, the lovely and talented Josh Cooper will be joining us in a second after he inspects his pants. Because he believes that he spilled some wine on his pants. In case you couldn't tell, it's after the All-Star game on Sunday. I have a beer, Leahy's drinking something clear, and Coop has a wine, so it's going to be one of those shows. What did you think of the All-Star experience? Not the game itself, the experience, Sean Leahy.
Well, I'm an unabashed All-Star game, All-Star weekend nerd. I love the skills, love the fan fest, I love the game, although tonight's game was maybe not up near the top list of maybe the best kind of or most exciting All-Star games. There wasn't a lot of, you know, tricky moves or any kind of skills really showing off tonight, despite the 29 goals, record 29 goals being scored. But all in all, I thought it was fun. This is my first time in Columbus, and I've heard nothing but rave reviews from people who've been here, and they were backed up. It was a great, great host city. And so much to do, so many places to go and see, and it was a really fun time.
The game was atrocious. I mean, let's just be honest here. The game was an absolute crap fest. It was boring, and yet there was 29 goals scored.
There was the cannon.
It was a terrible hockey game, and I was left wondering if we were going to be faced with another round of how to fix the All-Star game. But, like, the difference for me, though, in, like, thinking about the whole how to fix the All-Star game thing now is that I don't necessarily think the rest of the weekend needs to be fixed. Like, it was a shit ton of fun. I mean, the fantasy draft was great. It was loosey-goosey. We'll get into more of that in a second. The skills competition is always great, and it definitely had its share of highlights. But the All-Star game itself is terrible. It's unwatchable. Big, strong, air quotes, hockey, because it's not even that. And I'm left wondering, if they went 4-on-4, would it be any better? And then I think to myself, no, then it would just be a lazy, lackadaisical 4-on-4 with terrible goaltending. I don't know what the solution is, man, but it was a slog. I saw Kevin McGrann from the Toronto Star after the game, and dude was like, what'd you think? And I said, I think it literally took years off my life watching that game. Lovely and talented Josh Cooper is done inspecting his pants and now will tell us his thoughts on the All-Star game.
You're mean. Why'd you have to out me like that?
Well, we try to be as candid with the listeners as possible.
Transparency,
as they say, as we learned at the Professional Hockey Writers Association meeting this morning. We'll talk more about that in a second, too. Josh, your thoughts on All-Star weekend and, if anything, what you'd want to do to the All-Star game?
I agree. I thought that today's game was not exactly fun to watch. Talking to Aaron Ekblad afterwards, he said that some other players had to calm him down, essentially, because he was going so fast at the beginning, and that they were basically chirping him that he was playing too hard, which I thought was quite hilarious. I agree. I mean, the weekend was fantastic. The fantasy draft was wonderful. The skills competition. Thought there were some events that were kind of boring, but overall, just in general, still very, very entertaining. The game itself, Sunday, was just not fun to watch, and it was very boring. And the first two periods, I thought it was kind of cool, and then by the end, I was just basically done.
It's funny, like, you could tell people were skating hard. Like, I don't think that Jonathan Toews is an off switch for this kind of shit. So he was playing hard.
Kane was, too.
Kane was playing hard because he wanted to maybe trump his boy. The Rooks are playing hard. There are definitely some people that like Ovechkin was playing hard, as we found out, because he wanted to win a car for a youth hockey team of developmentally disabled children, which is always pretty altruistic. There was definitely some people who cared, but just overall the pace was terrible, and there was no. I guess maybe I think to myself, it was 4-on-4, right? Then at the very least, you're going to have a little bit more room for creativity. At least you might have a little bit more room for somebody to make a fancy pass or something like that. We saw, like, maybe two or three plays that rose above completely pedestrian goals. Now, the cool thing about this, of course, is the fact that when the shit hits the fan and the hockey is terrible, the fans get really snarky because they're hockey fans. So the Marc-Andre Fleury in the second period giving up 7 goals, tie the National Hockey League record set by Mike Vernon in 1990, and the Columbus fans chirping him, cheering him when he would make Bronx cheers and he would make pedestrian saves. And then the guy in the stands who, after Corey Crawford makes a save, screams to Fleury, "That's how you do it, Fleury." I mean, there was a certain amount of fun inherent in that, but just the game overall was terrible. And let's be honest here. Like, it's nice to reward the home team as much as you can, but the fans voted to give a card to the guy on the losing team. I don't know. It was a cherry on top of the shit Sunday, in my opinion.
No, I agree. I mean, it was certainly a memorable weekend for the Blue Jackets, their fans, and certainly Johansson had a good game. He had 2 goals and 2 assists. You know, I think Foligno got a goal as well, so at least the hometown guys contributed. But, I mean, Tavares had 4 goals. It's only been done 5 other times in All-Star games. Voracek tied Mario Lemieux, 6 points. He had a hat trick, and I believe Voracek's only had 1 hat trick for the Flyers so far this season. So both of those guys had memorable nights. And yeah, I understand wanting to get the fans involved in some way. But, and of course, we're talking about the All-Star game, so there's really no meaning at all. But if you're going to give an MVP, you know, let's give it to someone who's definitely deserving and on the winning team.
I felt terrible because if Tavares had won the Honda Accord, he would have had the nicest car in Uniondale, which is just obviously a nice thing.
We're not in Accord. It'll be on cinder blocks soon enough.
I didn't really care all that much as to who won the MVP. I'm watching the game and I'm thinking to myself, I mean, this is such a poorly played hockey game. I could give it to any one of these guys. I mean, I thought Justin Falk was tremendous. I mean, I don't understand why.
How could a defenseman be tremendous in that game?
I mean, he was a rock. I mean, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, I think he was -5.
He was.
So what? I mean, he skated well. He showed his skills. I mean, you know, I jokingly say that stuff only because I watched the game and I kind of, going to the third period, I'm thinking in my head, who do you give the MVP to? Just because this is such a poorly played hockey game and everyone's just going so half-assed that it's just, it doesn't even matter at this stage. So let the fans decide. They want to see their hometown guy win it.
Yeah.
He won it, and that was cool, and that's the end of it.
So, and somehow there weren't enough Chicago Blackhawks fans in the arena to
thank God
guys for the arena.
I'll say this about the fans. As much as I put over Columbus as being great for this game, and they've been great hosts, and the fans all around have been super enthusiastic about having the All-Star game here, there's a reason why comedy shows have applause signs. It's so the crowd will make some noise during the show to indicate that there is something fun happening. That crowd was just mummified dead, like, during that game. Silent.
Team Foligno was losing. There wasn't a lot of, like, cool things going on the ice.
Give me an Ole chant. Give me anything, man. I was like,
they were reacting to Fleury, you know, Fleury profile.
You gotta help it out a little bit. You know what I mean?
Vuvuzela. That would have been awesome.
A Vuvuzela, Godzilla,
Dancing Larry.
Oh, he's the best.
You know, and you had all these mascots there. We saw the Dallas City Goofball, a.k.a. Brett Hull, and that was great. Like, why couldn't the mascots help out a little bit? They needed to do more. Where were they? Were they all tuckered out from their mascot game that they couldn't help energize the crowd?
Well, they should have done like what the KHL did today in their skills competition and all-star games.
What, put all the fans at gunpoint and demand that they cheer?
Have a mascot shootout or something in between periods.
Wait, the KHL had a mascot shootout?
It was glorious, and they even brawled at the end of it. It was fantastic.
During
one attempt, one of the mascots, their head came off, so it was even, you know, scared some kids, I'm sure.
Who won the shootout? Was it Oppression the Gulag Pig? Was it Sickle the Hammer? it was Tommy, the Red Scare.
It was Randy, the Falling Lupo Rat.
I haven't spent enough time with you guys yet.
Listen, here's the thing, though. Like, this reminded me of, like, a really shitty M. Night Shyamalan movie. Like, everything leading up to the All-Star game was great. And the All-Star game, the big twist ending was terrible. And let's be honest, like, the draft was amazing. The draft was one of the most, and I don't know if it's because we watched it in the media room and everybody there gets all the inside references and stuff. Like, the draft itself was seriously one of the most entertaining NHL things I've seen. I've seen them do, you know? And yeah. I don't know, and I have a theory about that, and I'm going to tell you what my theory is. As upsetting as it is that we don't have Jager and Solani and Datsuk and Zetterberg and Lundqvist and a lot of these guys at this game, I wasn't trying to single out Europeans, by the way, I'm just saying a certain age bracket, let's say, and celebrity status. The fact that you had a lot of younger guys here, a lot of first-time guys here, and a lot of guys that are around the same age that all played on Team Canada, that all played on the U.S. Olympic team and stuff like that, I think it just lended itself to being a more loose atmosphere, and the booze helped, obviously. But I just feel like the camaraderie with those guys was what made the show work. And, you know, to be able to say, have NBC or whoever say, we want you guys to make a trade, and them to be able to identify, well, obviously Kessel for Sagan, is just, it's an amazingly cool moment that is completely of the players. And yet, it's completely for the fans too. And it was. I thought the draft was one of the more fun things I've ever seen the NHL do.
Well, what I found kind of interesting about the draft was, you know, as a member of the media, you put a recorder in front of a player's face. They basically freeze up.
Talk about getting drafted.
Well, but beyond the talk about questions, which are obviously.
Well, talk about what yeah. why you're. Saying
I will talk
this.
About this. Okay. I will talk about my anger and rage. But I mean, but seriously, when I. Watching that draft, it seemed as if, and you hear the jokes about Epics cameras or 24/7 cameras, they say, oh, they blend in. Well, you could tell the players were just totally comfortable in spite of the fact they were on live national television or whatever.
With hot mics talking
about
each other.
Hot mics talking about each other and and making fun of Kevin Shattenkirk's male pattern baldness. Drew Doughty, how dare you do that? I mean, seriously, that is not a funny thing. But beyond
that. It is kind of funny when he grows out his hair to look like Andy Kaufman a little bit.
He does. So
he does look a little humorous.
Yeah, and you kind of see the bald spot from standing. Okay, now I'm doing it. This is bad.
But listen, to talk about ball players. Let's talk about ball players for a second. Let's celebrate the fact that Ryan Getzlaf has completely embraced his inner Messier. He's not even fooling around anymore. He is a chrome dome, and he's proud of it. The interesting bald story of the weekend, though, obviously, was not Kevin Shattenkirk, but Phil Kessel. I didn't know that Kessel's hairline was escaping him as quickly as it was until the fastest skater competition, which was like seeing the wind blow and a man's toupee fly off.
You know, he's looking more and more. He's got like the Randy Carlyle going on. It almost looks like an eggplant, little hair sprouting up at the top.
Right.
And the bald falling
off. A little bit of that. And I have to admit that as a huge Phil Kessel fan, when he skated out in his intimidating, futuristic black and neon green uniform, and there's Phil Kessel wearing it, I'm like, this is the greatest juxtaposition I've ever seen between this little chubby piece of heaven wearing the most intimidating Seahawks-Raiders hybrid crazy jersey that he could be wearing. But anyway, I thought the fantasy draft was great, and you know, there is a part of me, obviously, as a masochist who misses as a sadist. Wait, which one is the one who administers? Sadist. As a sadist, there is a part of me that misses the complete embarrassment and shame that's levied upon the last pick, like we had with Kessel in the first year of it. Now, everybody, yeah, it's like Oprah. Everybody gets a car. You know, nobody's leaving upset about anything. There's a part of me that misses that embarrassment, but I think overall, it's got a nice vibe to it, and it really kind of brings you into the weekend. And as Phil Kessel also eloquently put it after the game, this league is different, eh? You know,
so he said,
eh? Yeah. Oh, he says they all the time.
Wow.
Yeah, he's picked that up. He's got to blend in, Josh. You know how they got to blend
he
in
likes
a little
his
bit.
Soda.
He loves his soda too. That's true.
He said that was a quote of the weekend. I thought, in a weekend full of
quote of the weekend, a tough one.
Phil Kessel saying I like my soda is probably number one for me.
It's a tough one. I don't know if I have a quote of the weekend. Do you have one off the top of your head?
Not a quote of the weekend, but speaking of Kessel, he did a scrum during media day. He was about 25 minutes laid back talking about the differences between American and Canadian television programs, how much he loved American Pickers and those shows on History Channel, how he loved going fishing. It was like a Phil Kessel that we're not going to see now that All-Star Weekend's over. He's going to go back to Toronto, not score a goal in four games, and ask why he's struggling, why is he uncoachable again. So that's another reason why All-Star Weekend is great, because these guys can let their guards down and relax and not worry about, you know, the day-in, day-out struggles of the team and all the pressures that come with that. So definitely seeing Kessel in this element, I think, sheds a little bit different light on than what we usually see.
We'll cover the big press conference, the big World Cup-y, Winter Classic-y press conference in a sec, but just keep it on the rest of the All-Star weekend. The skills competition, as I've talked about on the show before, I'm a huge nerd for, and it didn't disappoint, although I missed a lot of it because I was covering the cool NHL player tracking technology that they've now debuted, which, again, like, it's going to open up so many doors and so many possibilities on how we're going to view the game, finally bringing in that awesome NASCAR element of being able to find the players on the ice, get real-time stats. I'm stoked for it. I don't know about you boys. I think that the technology is really promising. So let's just touch on that real quick. What did you think of the puck track?
It's cool. I'm looking forward to seeing more of it in use in an actual game and not All-Star Weekend where everything's half-paced. But, I mean, as fans, as reporters, why would you not want more information on how to evaluate players, games, teams? That's why I never understood the advanced stats backlash. This is more information, better information on how to evaluate these teams and players and see trends and see why the Avalanche aren't as good this year as they were last year. You know, I don't know why you wouldn't want that information on the, to be out there and be able to consume it. So I'm all for it. And I'm just kind of seeing the videos that's been out there so far that you had in your post yesterday. I'm just looking forward to see what else they have in store.
What about you? What do you think about player tracking?
I agree with Sean on that front and just getting more information. But just looking at it and thinking about it, I was just thinking in my head how far we've come since Fox Tracks. And I know that I say that kind of jokingly, but it's very true. I mean, just remember how awful that microchip puck was back then.
Yeah.
And just look at the technology we have now to where you can track a player's speed, a puck's trajectory, and not make it look kind of stupid.
Cheesy video gamey
like Fox Tracks did. And you can bring it to the mainstream public in a classier, easier to follow away than just a glow puck kind of going around the ice that, as a traditional hockey fan, was incredibly upsetting when I was watching that back in the day. So I just being able to see that, I thought was really, really neat and was very promising in terms of blending the technologies that we now have with this kind of old school game. It's pretty cool.
The interesting thing is going to be the push-pull with the technology and the players and the NHLPA, because essentially the more information that's readily available during a broadcast or afterwards, the easier it's going to be for people to criticize players. I mean, that's basically why you look at stats. It's not to laud people normally. It's to say, why is this thing not working? Why is this player failing? And the player tracking technology literally maps the ice. I've seen prototypes more advanced than the one that I wrote about where you will literally – it will look like NHL 15 – you'll be able to go zoom down to ice level, literally follow the puck as it goes from stick to stick. This is all digital. And it could in theory, could happen in real time as you watch the game. But essentially what you're going to be able to do is get a 3D frozen in time breakdown of any play. So stuff the cameras on the television can't catch, which means there will not be another player in the National Hockey League in the next 2 years that will be able to avoid the "you didn't back check." They're all going to be exposed. Every single play will be mapped digitally to the point where you'll see how it developed, you'll see how every player played his part, and you'll literally be able to see who effed up. And I don't think they like it. I don't think they like that. I don't think they like the idea that there's going to be a lot more stats available, and as we get further and further down the line, more stats that are going to show things like possession, things like that. They're wary about it. It's not going to matter ultimately because they're going to have to just grin and bear it. But players don't like to be criticized. The NHL is sensitive to that at least, but that's going to be the pushback on it. Is you're going to make somebody look bad by making all this information readily available. So, I don't know. Skills competition itself, the trick shot stuff, of course, was for me still the highlight. Prop comedy where who was it? Johansson was it? Who took the kid?
Johansson
took the kid. Johansson dressed up in the OSU jersey. You had Tarasenko shooting at the target.
And the selfie.
And he had the selfie with Brian Elliott, and Brian Elliott wore the blindfold. And then of course you had Jakub Voracek using little Johnny Gaudreau as a prop. It was a really fun time. I think. The thing that really was really weird for me, though, was, and I still can't figure this out, I wrote about this today, was the lack of spinoramas. Like, Are they just programmed not to do it anymore so they don't do it? Or do the NHL want some level of consistency and say, okay, you can't do this in the regular season. Don't be spinning around in the shootout. It's weird for me to not see that.
That lacrosse move you're talking about.
Yeah,
like the KHL guy did today.
Or even just the spinorama. Nobody did it.
Yeah, I know guys like Stamkos can do that move. And guys with that kind of skill. But, yeah, as far as the creativity, as far as the non-prop comedy moves, there wasn't a whole lot of creativity there. I thought it was a lot of, between the legs and trying to juggle the puck on your stick, or Ovi
trying to do the baseball swing
with the goalie stick. But these guys certainly have the skill to do it. Maybe it's just they haven't had the time to practice those moves, so they don't feel as confident.
Yep.
I think part of the problem is it's just all been done already. And when I watch a shootout, there's a bajillion moves.
Has it all been done?
I think so. I don't mind the lack of spinorama just because I'm just tired of it. And I've seen it already, and I think the players have done it enough times already to where it's over. And it's time to try something new and something different. And I thought it was cool, but I also think Vladimir Tarasenko going through two New York Rangers defensemen and doing a Forsberg move was way more cooler than something like that.
Right. That's why the shootout sucks.
Right, exactly. So, but I just feel like, not that they're kind of running out of moves, but I see so many ridiculous moves and shootouts in games now where it's just seeing it in a skills competition. I think players maybe just start getting too fancy and start overthinking just because they use their best moves in games now just because of the shootout.
Yep.
So I think that in some ways, in a weird way, the shootout in NHL games dilutes the skills competition shootout.
It always has. It has since the start.
Very interesting.
It used to be something really special. Now it's not. Kane wins shot accuracy. Duran wins fastest skater.
That was awesome.
And it was fun. Kessel versus Sagan kicks off fastest skater. That was kind of fun. The skills relay continues to be a giant cluster because they continue to want to use those stupid little nets.
Those are the best. I don't know.
I hate the little nets. It slows down everything. It's terrible.
But Ryan Getzlaff just dominated that. He was so good at it, and it was so much fun to watch him just kind of just put it in the net.
I want to throw little nets under the sun. If you were wondering about the air traffic on Saturday night being diverted, it's because of Josh Cooper's boner watching Shea Weber win the hardest shot competition.
Wow.
Former Tennessean beat writer Josh Cooper. Excited that Shea Weber is now king of the hardest shot.
I was very, very happy for Shea Weber because if you think about it, if he loses hardest shot, and if he had lost hardest shot essentially based off of the fact that he had kind of been disqualified from missing the net in the first one, he's like Mr. Bridesmaid. Doesn't win a Norris Trophy because he's always second. Nashville matches the offer sheet to Philadelphia, who I still think may have been his preferred destination.
You think?
But could be another story altogether. And then ends up not winning hardest shot because he misses the net twice, potentially. Mm. But he cranked 108.5. Good for Shea. Happy for Shea. Mm-hmm. He now wears the crown. He's the guy that you have to beat, even though Zdeno Chara still owns the hardest shot.
Yeah, but it's really like the reason why the Mets went to the World Series in 2000. They didn't have to face the Braves.
That's right.
Weber didn't have to face Zdeno Chara. Next year, Nashville, little hometown showdown. Maybe Chara gets in, hopefully. And, they finally meet because I was very disappointed in Bufflin, by the way. Everyone was kind of looking forward to those two guys, and I think he hit over 100 once, maybe, at least two attempts. So.
Well, yep. And then Weber obviously wins the hardest shot competition and keeps the title for a few moments until Josh Cooper had his own hardest shot upon seeing Weber won, and he broke
table. Greg.
Broke the press table right in half.
This was a PG-13 podcast.
Well, I didn't say the point being, of course, is that the skills competition was a grand old time. I think we all had fun, and I think it was, again, the highlight of the weekend, for me at the very least, was the skills competition. And you could have just ended it there instead of having everybody watch a bunch of guys hungover skating around and doing their thing on Sunday, which was just terrible.
They were hungover today?
I imagine so. It's a few guys that I've heard were around town, imbibing a little bit. We saw a couple imbibing a little bit, staggering around, falling down. Good times. So All-Star Weekend overall, Sean Leahy, the overall experience, talking about the 3 days of events, talking about the venue, talking about the city, talking about the aesthetics, the fan fest,
where you could go and see the GM award and also see
the Mark Messier Leadership Award, also known as someone's third grade art project.
Yeah. Presented by Mark Messier.
You could go buy a lot of neon green shit. What would you give the overall grade for this All-Star Weekend here in Columbus?
An A-. I had a great time. It was the first time in Columbus, like I mentioned earlier. And I love the arena. I walked before the game tonight. I walked around, just kind of did a lap on the main concourse. There was so much going on between food and merchandise.
I think you're the one who said it's reminiscent of the Prudential Center, except it's like...
No, not that it's reminiscent. It's just better.
It's wider concourses and shit happening.
Yeah, there's things going on.
Yeah.
There's hockey jerseys on the wall. There's art. There's so many concessions, so many merchandise things, so many little games. There's a couple cool little areas where they had displays of like the history of the Blue Jackets. Like they had the first goal and the first hat trick. Doug McClain statue, of course. Him and Rick Nash. They had a very cool, which I remember seeing in Philly during the draft. They had a cool, it was like a penalty box with the glass going up high with a bunch of hat trick hats that they had here. So that was really cool to see. So there's just a lot of life and personality in this arena, and it's huge. They have the cannon, which I'm sure if you're listening to this, you probably saw way too many tweets about this weekend from annoying hockey writers. But it was a great time. It was a great city, and looking forward to Nashville in the next year.
And what about the cannon, Josh?
I'm an annoying hockey writer, Sean. I tweeted about the cannon.
Suck it up, man. You knew it was coming.
What did you find out about the players in the cannon tonight, Josh?
Well, I found out that they hated the cannon, and I really don't have a problem with the cannon.
Which, again, by no means does that mean they were hungover, except it totally does.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the noises are louder to them.
It is the hockey equivalent of waking up on a Sunday morning and having construction outside your window.
I have absolutely no problem with the cannon during the game. I know exactly when it's coming. I know
what's going on. It comes right after this.
Yes.
But that was about to rock! Fire!
But, I mean... It was the random cannon. It was the random cannon shots. Like, wow, that sounds like a porno.
You're talking about Shea Weber again?
It was the random cannon firing squads that happened in the middle of like the skills competition. It's like Johnny Gaudreau was skating. Pah! You know, it's like. It was stuff like that. It was today during the player introductions where I'm sipping my coffee and then boom, and you thought I had trouble, you know, getting the wine off of my pants. You know, that was
a lot more on your pants then.
No, that was during the Shea Weber competition. Yeah. But beyond that, I mean, I really love it here, and it's funny just because like coming here when I covered the Predators, I always thought if this team was – because when I covered the Predators, with the exception maybe the last year, the Blue Jackets were horrible. And whenever I would come here, I would always say to myself, if this team got any good, this would just be an awesome, awesome place to watch hockey, to be a hockey fan, to be a hockey player. And you saw that this weekend. And, yeah, the fans weren't too great during the game or whatever. But just in general, it's a beautiful facility. It's a great area around the arena. It's a really nice town. Great food. Awesome late-night dining. I mean, it is just a fun, fun place to be a hockey fan.
What's your letter grade?
My letter grade? This was my first All-Star game since 1994 when I was 11 years old and went with my dad for All-Star Weekend in New York City. And I would probably give this in between a B and a B+. I just felt like there were some things that were missing. I think the game maybe cast kind of a bad sort of view to me.
Yeah,
the game because everything leading up to the game was just tremendous, from the fantasy draft, the layout, stuff around the arena, eateries, bars, bands, but the game was just so not great. And honestly, I thought the 5 o'clock start time was just kind of a weird netherworld of start times.
It felt like it was in a different time zone.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you kind of wake up, you have your food, like Phil Kessel, you have your soda. I mean, I didn't like that. I mean, just. For me, it would have been a solid A without how the game went down.
I would give it an A-. I agree with you, Leahy. I think the game brings that maybe down from what would have been an A
to an A-minus. Because the other part of this thing is how compact everything is. You know, maybe I have a little PTSD from Ottawa, where we had to schlep out to Katana to go see the, or Kanata, where the hell it is. Katana, you know, Mortal Kombat's Katana, to go to see this game. And then, like, here, it's like the arena's a block away from the main hotel.
Everything's within walking distance.
Everything's within walking distance. Well, okay, caveat. Every place that I've tried to walk to here that seems kind of far, Google Maps says, Yahoo Maps, says, says 9 minutes. And then I walk there, and it's like 20 minutes. It's the weirdest thing I've never...
It's still fine. It's still 20 minutes.
It's still walking distance, but it lies. It's a city of lies. The other thing about food, obviously, is I should probably mention at the media party last night, I ate two-thirds of a pint of ice cream with salted caramel ice cream from Jenny's, which was amazing. And then I probably had, I would say, rough estimate, 14 pieces of pizza. So the food was really good. And
there's a girl over there doing cartwheels, just stitching on.
There's a girl doing cartwheels behind us? So she is. And then, yeah, overall, I would say A-. I think it was about an A-. All right. Remaining time here on the podcast, let's talk about the big announcement this week by Gary Bettman. The World Cup of Hockey is returning to our lives in 2016 in Toronto. And also, we know what the outdoor games are going to be next season. Let's start with the second one first. Winter Classic, Bruins and Habs in Foxborough.
Workout of the day.
Woo! Workout of the day. What did you play?
Lacrosse.
She's a former lacrosse player.
She must be from Maryland.
Why? Because she wasn't very good.
No, because they all play lacrosse there.
They all play lacrosse here in OSU. OSU is a big lacrosse school.
Oh, really?
Anyway, I don't know. Wild and Blackhawks at University of Minnesota, and then the Red Wings and Abs at Coors Field in a game presented by Coors. Any thoughts on these outdoor games? Are you sick and tired of seeing the Blackhawks?
I think we all are, but if you strip that away and realize what these games are about, making money, television ratings, You're going to have a team like the Blackhawks in. They have the star power. And as Nick Kotznicka wrote this weekend, they've become the NHL's glamour franchise. The league loves getting them in because Chicago, those TV ratings pop, and they buy tickets, they buy merch, they send their guys to the All-Star game. They actually show up. It's a very involved market, you know, since that franchise has turned around 5-6 years ago. So,
yeah.
The other matchups, I mean, obviously, it was inevitable the Wild were going to get a game at some point.
We all wanted to be against Dallas, though. I mean,
I didn't. Why?
What? North Stars versus Wild?
You're telling me that the NHL would have the Stars wear Minnesota North Stars jerseys?
No, I'm not
they
saying
make
that. I'm
whole
not
new
saying they
would,
of course
so
they
would.
Wouldn't.
Buy
of course they wouldn't.
Can buy.
But I wish they would.
But
I wish
won't.
It was Carolina and Boston and the Foxborough game and the Hurricanes
Whalers.
Are dressed like the Hurricanes.
But we live in reality and we're dealing with the NHL here.
It's true.
You know, they're going to have, for the Winter Classic, they're going to have those certain teams or certain markets in, and that's another reason why they created.
And by the way,
series.
Next time you want to say that we're dealing in reality, okay, we just saw someone win MVP of a game based on Twitter votes in the arena, and he got a car, and he was a losing team.
That's NHL reality.
Oh, okay. What about the outdoor games, Josh?
I understand the reason of the Winter Classic. I know it's a cash grab. I know that it's for TV ratings. I totally get that. I would just love a Winter Classic to not be Eastern Conference or East Coast teams. It's just, like, I'm a West Coast homer. I am a Western Conference homer. I fully admit it. I understand that a lot of those teams don't draw very well, but I don't think anyone can tell me that the best outdoor game that we've seen was not Anaheim versus Los Angeles last year in Dodger Stadium. Just from a pure entertainment standpoint. I mean, beyond the Gary Bettman and Kiss photo, which we talk about and is just fantastic, I mean, it was a show. And I think that you should just embrace that and do that and make a cool outdoor game your signature event and not just reward, you know, Jeremy Jacobs and Montreal Canadiens for being Jeremy Jacobs and the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, right. I feel like that even though the matchup's cool on that, you need to venture outwards and not just say, oh, yeah, and to soothe the Western Conference, you know, sore egos, we're going to have a game in Colorado at Coors Field, sponsored by Coors, and have a game in Minnesota, which is the state of hockey. I mean, it's frustrating being someone who's been around the Western Conference very often and seeing a lot of these hockey markets being really good hockey markets. I don't understand that. But at the same token, I understand it's a cash grab. I know that it's important for the league to get TV ratings and money. Boston and Montreal is going to do both. But as somebody who just kind of would like to see something different, it would be pretty cool to see, I don't know, like Vancouver and Los Angeles in the Rose Bowl. I think
no one gives
that
a
would
shit.
Be awesome.
No one gives a shit. The Winter Classic should stay in the East. It should stay amongst teams that people give a shit about. And the Stadium Series exists so all of those other people can get a taste. It's the way it works. And I am fine with it. I'm fine with that happening because I don't want Vancouver in the Winter Classic. They can have their own stupid game, their fake outdoor game inside.
Yeah, that was actually pretty bad.
The outdoor games, being what they are, I think are fine. I would like to see my wish list now is down to St. Louis. Like, yeah. Give St. Louis a game next year, please. I was told by someone that Coors gets it before Busch.
Well,
that's actually a thing.
Makes sense.
But we'll see if that's the case. Maybe they get one next year. Finally, World Cup of Hockey. I'll undoubtedly go into this in more in depth with Merrick when we're back on together. Whenever that might be, there's a blizzard, and I'll be in Columbus for at least another 2 days. I am proudly in the minority on this, I think, in the sense that I love the idea. I have no problem with the Young Stars team. I'm excited to see what that becomes. I have no problem with the All-Euro team. Bettman kind of said that the only reason they're doing it is because they didn't have time for a qualification tournament. I kind of feel that's horseshit. I kind of feel like if you're trying to do an all-NHL tournament and it's going to be 90% NHL players, you don't want Roman Wick scoring the tournament-winning goal for Switzerland and then going back to the Swiss League and being lauded for it. I think you want your own people in it. And if you include Slovakia and Switzerland, you're going to have a lot of players that don't play in the NHL on those teams. So I think I don't buy it, but I think the format this time is fine.
We've talked this before. I'm not a fan. I'm a purist. I love the international competition, whether it's the Olympics or, you know, World Cups or Canada Cups from back in the day. I just loved how the video introducing this, they showed the Canada Cups, then the old World Cups, and now we're going to have this tournament with the North American under-23s and this pan-European team, according to Gary Bettman. But I love underdog. We all love underdog in sport. I mean, we love following Slovenia and Latvia last year during the Olympics. You know, the Switzerland's, you know, had some upsets in the last couple of international tournaments. You know, we love seeing those teams and those underdogs fight and, you know, put a scare in these big powers. So you're not going to get that this time around. And I mean, what kind of pride are the North American or team? I mean, I can understand the European team. Because it's almost like that Ryder Cup idea that they're going to have in the future, where these group of, you know, Swiss guys, Slovenians, Slovaks, they're going to group together and fight the Russians and the Canadians and the Americans, Swedes. You know, you kind of get some pride out of that. But this North American team, young Canadians, young Americans, what kind of pride are they going to get out of this? They want to play for Team Canada, they want to play for Team USA, but they're under 23, so they have to go on this team. But are they going to need pride playing in this tournament?
I don't know. Remains to be seen.
I think there are a couple interesting components beyond the tournament. One just being the fact that this just makes the NHL schedule, or the hockey schedule, if you will, just very, very long. It's just fascinating just that it's almost turning hockey into the NFL and that there's always something for fans to look forward to. And that's a cool thing. I mean, it absolutely is, just because, you know, you have this break and, you know, it's like fans can kind of get a rest or whatever. But no, like, hockey fans are pretty passionate, and now they're going to have something else to look forward to on top of everything else that goes on in the season. So that's number one takeaway. Number two is, again, what's going to happen with the Olympics in 2018? And then
they're not going to go.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what does this mean for that? And then 2022, and a more longer sighted view when Beijing and Almaty, Kazakhstan are the only two places that are bidding for the Olympics. I mean, you have to start kind of thinking, is this a way to kind of front the location of the Olympics, the next one being in South Korea, the following one being either in China or Kazakhstan? Is this the end of the NHL's participation in the Olympics? Is this a way to get the players to enjoy a format enough to just say, okay, who cares about an Olympic gold medal?
Well, not and only so they're going to make a buttload of money.
Not only enjoy a format. I mean, if they're going to make if they're going to gross $120 million, that means they're going to probably net $100 million, and that's $50 million for the league and $50 million for the players. So I mean, that's going to have to be the thing that works, is that they're going to have to make enough money in this thing to not be that upset they're not going to be able to play in the Olympics. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I still think at the end of the day, the NHL is going to have a problem with European players that grew up wanting to play in the Olympics so badly that they're not going to be able to keep them out. I mean, I thought that with Sochi, you're going to have Russian guys go play in the KHL just to play in Sochi. And I think you're going to have European players that structure their contract where they're not in the NHL for a year, an Olympic year, and then come back. I really do. I think that's going to happen. I'm extraordinarily open-minded about it. I love the format. I love the Young Stars team. I hope that the European team just puts a picture of Andrei Kopitar on the front of their jerseys with, like, the Looney Tunes logo on the back or something like that. I'm really open-minded that it's going to be a good event and that it's going to be competitive hockey. I am a little concerned about it being so close to training camp. It's going to overlap with training camp. It's the latest it could end. The three-game final would be October 1st, and the series season would start on October 12th. So that's a little weird. But it's going to be a shit ton of fun. I mean,
the interesting thing, at least for that North American team, is with the age cutoff. If they said if you're under 23 come 2016 September, no matter how great you are, you're on that North American team. So at least we'll have Jack Eichel and Connor McDavid as teammates, right?
Yeah. At the very least, I think that the inherent drama of a kid like McDavid trying to knock out Canada, or a kid like Eichel trying to knock out the U.S. as a very big underdog. I mean, some of the roster projections for this team. Yeah.
Who are the goalies? You can have AHL guys and kids.
John Gibson, the Furkal kid. That's it. I don't know.
It could be Malcolm Subban.
Yeah, Malcolm Subban. So that inherent drama and that storyline is going to be fun. Gergensen said, as a Latvian, his opportunity to knock off some of the big boys will come with this all Euro team. And he's excited about that. So there are aspects of it that I find really intriguing, but I do understand the Canadian and Sean Leahy lament that by calling this the World Cup, you are putting a label on it that it hasn't earned. It's not the World Cup. It's something different. And they're trying to link it back to something that it's not. And I'm telling you, if they had come out and said, the Super Series of hockey, well, maybe not Super Series, that also would have been something that harkens back. If they had said, the Wonder Bowl, I don't fucking know. If they had said something like that instead of World Cup of Hockey, I think at least half the Canadians that have beef with this tournament would be more open-minded about it. And I just think it's calling it the World Cup, seeing the World Cup's coming back, and then giving them something where it's like the alt under-23 team playing Canadians. They're like, what is that?
And hopefully they change that freaking ugly trophy that they've been handing out the last.
Bill Daly said they will change the trophy.
Make it like a cup or something, but yeah. I don't know what the hell they've used the last two times.
Yep, indeed. All right, everybody, that's the show. We're gonna go get drunk and play video games, and I'll talk to you whenever I get back into the frozen hellhole that is New York, and dig my car out. And get out of Columbus. Thanks to Sean Leahy. Thanks to Josh Cooper. Thanks to you. Talk to you soon. Bye. Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.